Very tech. Well, good morning, everyone. Those of you who have followed the breadcrumbs from 4203, welcome to 3191. This is the Senate Education Committee, and we have a very short agenda today. There are 13 bills on the agenda. However, 8 of them are on consent. 2 have been pulled. That's number item 2, AB 147 by the chair, and item 8, AB 716 by the author. And those will be rescheduled for another meeting. So in that case, we only have 3 bills and we have 3 authors, which is really wonderful. So we'll start as a subcommittee, as I say. Assemblymember O'Donnell, you are first with item 6, AB 566. Please join us. Morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning. AB 566 requires contractors and any subcontractors for leaseback and leased-owned projects to use a skilled and trained workforce at the school site in which the construction would occur. Under current law, any public works project under $15,000 must go through the competitive bidding process. Leaseback bypasses the bidding process by allowing a school district to lease property to a contractor for a dollar without going to bid. The contractor constructs a school facility using its own capital and then leases the building back to the school district. The school district makes lease payments and at the conclusion of the lease payments takes title to the property. Leaseback was initially designed by the legislature to give school districts a way to finance a project. Over time, as exemplified in an appellate court decision issued just last week, school districts have used leaseback as a construction contract, but without going to bid. While the court raises a number of issues to be addressed another day in another bill, this bill attempts to provide some assurances that we're getting a quality product by requiring the use of state-registered apprentices to construct these projects. I would like to accept the committee's suggested amendments identified on page 5 of the analysis. I should note that. As amended, the bill will ensure that school districts will continue to pre-qualify and rank potential contractors and major subcontractors, even though we are essentially out of state bonds. With that is Cesar Diaz here from the State Building Trades, Madam Chair.
Thank you. In support of the bill.
Madam Chair, Member Cesar Diaz, on behalf of the State Building and Construction Trades Council, we thank the author for introducing this important bill and, of course, for the committee for working with us on trying to address the issue that was raised in the analysis, and thank them very much for that amendment. The bill seeks to add accountability to a process now that provides flexibility to school districts, flexibility that they have currently under law that some districts tend to abuse through some of the reporting that you've seen in newspapers such as the Fresno Bee and the Orange County Register. Well, they completely bypass the competitive bidding process and some of the protections that have been built into the law to prevent cronyism and people actually gaming the system for their own financial gain instead of providing a better work product for the communities and the taxpayers. So what this bill does is adds public accountability through a pre-qualification process so that the list of actual and pool of contractors are better qualified. And they also require that these contractors employ individuals that have training, highly skilled construction workers from that geographic area to ensure that these projects also have a quality product at the end so taxpayers aren't having to redo some of the work because of just the way that they sole source these projects. So we believe the bill is for public accountability and provides a strong sense of that, and in addition, still continues to provide districts with the ability to use leaseback. For those reasons, we urge your support.
Thank you. Just hang on, please. I think we have a quorum. Please call the roll.
Liu.
Here.
Renner. Block.
Here.
Block here. Hancock. Leyva. Mendoza.
Here.
Mendoza here. Monning.
Here.
Monning here. Pan. Vidak.
Here.
Vidak here.
That's 5.
5. Okay. I'm sorry. Others in support of the bill?
Chair, members, Joe Cruz on behalf of the California State Council of Labor. I want to associate myself, my comments with Mr. Cesar Diaz's comments and just say that this gives school districts an opportunity, an advantageous tool and toolbox to attract the best skilled workforce and to build the best facilities and save taxpayers' dollars. I appreciate the time and ask for an aye vote.
Thank you. Others in support? Is there opposition to the bill? Did the committee receive any opposition? Did we receive? Oh, yes, there is opposition. Yes.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Richard Markison here today representing the Air Conditioning Trade Association, the Plumbing, Heating, Cooling Contractors of California, the Western Electrical Contractors Association, and Associated Builders and Contractors of San Diego. We're not opposed to leaseback or skilled workforce. We are opposed, however, to the provision that exempts projects under a PLA from demonstrating their commitment to a skilled workforce. We think that there should be a level playing field. We think that every contractor should demonstrate to the satisfaction of the school district or the public entity that they are committed and are in compliance with skilled workforce. We are opposed to the bill unless it is amended to strike that exemption. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Any others in opposition to the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Mitch Seaman with California Labor Federation. Apologies for being late. We are in strong support of the bill.
Okay, thank you. Others opposed to the bill? Seeing none, are there questions from members? I have a question. Fuentes had a bill in 2012 that the Department of Industrial Relations is doing a report on pre-qualification, apprenticeship programs, et cetera, and that report's not due till 2018. So the question is this kind of premature, or why aren't we waiting till for a couple of years?
Thank you, Senator. We were the sponsors of that legislation. It was the third go around before it actually was passed and signed by the governor, and it is tied to the state facilities program. What the difference between that and what this bill seeks to achieve is that this bill only focuses on some pre-qualification, regardless of the funding source, only for leaseback projects,
okay,
which tend to be sole-sourced. And then the committee amendments, which are very helpful, help the State Allocation Board with some of the appeals that may be coming forward because of the Fuentes bill if the school districts aren't fulfilling their duties and their responsibility to actually pre-qualify and then seek reimbursement for that project when they seek their application to the State Allocation Board.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Any other questions or comments from members? The bill has been moved. So we're all sleepy this morning. Let's call the roll.
Do pass as amended to appropriations. Lou?
Aye.
Lou, aye. Renner? Block?
Aye.
Block, aye. Hancock? Leyva?
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Mendoza?
Aye.
Mendoza, aye. Monning?
Aye.
Monning, aye. Pan? Vidak? Vidak, no.
That's okay. 5-1. 5-1, sufficient for passage. We'll leave the roll open for our absent members. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah, I know. Okay. I see in the audience we have lots of supporters for a particular bill that has been pulled from the agenda, so it's not going to be heard today. I apologize for that. It's item 2, AB 147. So we are resetting that bill for another time. In that regard, there are 8 items on consent. Do I hear a motion to move consent? Okay, thank you very much. It's item 1, AB 7, item 3, AB 163, item 4, AB 220, item 5, AB 331, item 9, AB 767, item 11, AB 1058, item 12, AB 1167, and item 13, 1538. With this rate, we'll be just breezing through all of our education bills. Okay, so that's the consent. It's been moved. Let's call the roll.
Lou?
Aye.
Lou, aye. Renner? Block?
Aye.
Block, aye. Hancock? Leyva?
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Mendoza?
Aye.
Mendoza, aye. Monning?
Aye.
Monning, aye. Pan?
Aye.
Pan, aye. Vidak?
Aye.
Vidak, aye. Renner?
Aye.
Renner, aye. Okay, that's 8-0.
8-0. We'll keep the roll open for an absent member. Okay, and again, members, item 2 was pulled by the chair, and item 8 was pulled by the author. So next is item 7, AB 636, Medina. Please join us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. AB 636 would allow university to disclose the identity of an alleged assailant to local law enforcement if the institution determines that the alleged assailant represents a serious threat to the safety of the campus community. AB 636 is a cleanup language to a bill passed last year, AB 1433, and addresses concerns about limiting an institution's ability to protect its campus community. Currently, victims have exclusive control over withholding the alleged assailant's name from local law enforcement. AB 636 would help an institution identify who may pose a serious or dangerous threat and prevent more people on campus from being victimized. This bill does not authorize release of the victim's name to local law enforcement unless the victim has consented to being identified. I believe this bill strikes an appropriate balance in supporting victims and protecting the larger campus community. With me is Veronica Villalobos from the Association of Independent California Colleges and Universities.
Okay, those in support, please.
Thank you. Veronica Villalobos Cruz with AICCU. We are supportive of AB 636. We believe the bill gives us discretion to fulfill our obligation under Title IX to prevent sexual violence and protect students from a hostile environment. It's our obligation under Title IX to take steps and to end sexual violence and eliminate hostile environments and prevent its occurrence. With the adoption of the law that Assemblymember Medina was speaking to in 2014, we are now required to report to police or notify them of any violent crimes, sexual assaults, and hate crimes that have occurred on campus. Yet the law took away our discretion to share the name of the alleged assailant. Under Title IX, there's a balancing test that allows us to override confidentiality when we feel there is a greater threat or risk to the campus community, and the bill the bill took that away in terms of notifying local police. So the scenarios that we're talking about is where there may be multiple victims, and these victims want confidentiality, but they're naming the same perpetrator. And for example, in cases of sexual assault, studies have shown that serial offenders on average have 6 victims. So under current law, we're now powerless to report the name of the alleged assailant to local police when we need assistance. And so the bill allows this to occur. We have to meet 2 criteria. There has to be serious and ongoing threat to the local community, and the immediate assistance of police is needed. This is particularly important for private nonprofit colleges because we do not have a police force like UC or CSU in the community colleges. So our relationship with local police is extremely important. We don't have those resources. We can't detain, we can't arrest folks. We appreciate your consideration and your support on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Others in support?
John Lovell, on behalf of the California College and University Police Chiefs Association. We are strongly in support of this bill. The current law in California is unprecedented. It gives the victim veto power over whether the identity of the alleged assailant will be turned over to local law enforcement. Nowhere else in law is that absolute veto power present. Everywhere else, there's a balancing test. Now, sometimes a little bit of history is worth a lot of argument. When I was a young man, I was a prosecutor in the LA City Attorney's Office in the 1970s. And in those days, the policy of the LA City Attorney, and yes, every other prosecution office, is that if a domestic violence victim asked not to go forward with the case was dropped. And I can remember as a young prosecutor, and we used to derisively refer to this as the chocolate and flowers defense, you know, where the perpetrator, oh, I'm sorry, it'll never happen again, and it damn well did happen again and again and again. Finally, in 1973, Bert Pines, who had just been elected city attorney, and for those of you who never had the pleasure of dealing with him, one of the outstanding public servants, changed the policy. The victim no longer had veto power. Yes, cases were difficult if the victim said, well, I'm not going to testify, but you could still build them from extrinsic evidence. And guess what happened? The pressure on the victim ended. Under current law on college campuses right now, the victim is not empowered. The victim is enslaved because everybody knows that the victim controls whether or not the alleged perpetrator's name is turned over. So you get all of this peer pressure, campus fascism, if you will, where the victim is just constantly cajoled and pressured. This will liberate the victim from that state of affairs, and it'll ensure that those of us in campus law enforcement who know damn well someone is a problem, might be a threat to other people in the future, might go to another school and perpetrate it, we are able to then responsibly protect all students on the campus. This is an extremely important bill, and I cannot tell you how important this is to the people I represent.
Thank you. Others in support?
Hi, Bob Naylor, representing Stanford University, where I hope we don't have campus fascism. But in any event, for the reasons previously eloquently stated, we support the bill. And I would just add that the sponsors of the original legislation have agreed to what this bill does.
Okay, great. Thank you. Any others in support? Is there opposition to the bill? Seeing none. Are there questions from members? Senator Mauning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to thank the author for bringing this forward. I fully endorse the objectives, and I just have a couple of questions of concern about potential unintended consequences in terms of, does the bill establish criteria that has to be met before the name of an alleged perpetrator is submitted to law enforcement? And then I'm also concerned in the area of alleged hate crimes, a potential conflict of somebody exercising free speech rights, somebody who doesn't agree with what's being articulated concludes that it's a hate crime in nature, and then it gets turned over to law enforcement and could interfere with the exercise of free speech rights. So those are just a couple of my areas of concern, and I'd appreciate any comments that could reassure me.
I'll have Veronica address the criteria.
Thank you.
Thank you for the questions. Yeah, the two criteria are that the person represents a serious and ongoing threat to the safety of the campus community, and that the immediate assistance of law enforcement is needed to intervene. So it's a time-sensitive case, and the seriousness of the situation has to be considered. With regard to free speech rights and hate crimes, last year's AB 1433 had required us to report all Part 1 violent crimes, including hate crimes and sexual assaults, to local police. So we have to do that under current law. The local police don't have to pursue anything, but we really, the scenarios that we have been familiar with really had nothing to do with free speech or hate crimes. It was more the weapons, serious public safety threat, sexual assault.
If I may add to that, Senator, the requirements under the CLEARI Act that we're required to report are hate crimes, but they are modified as violent hate crimes. So they are they're not under the rubric of speech. And I think this bill reflects that as well. So that's the kind of hate crime we're talking about.
Right, and that's helpful. In the earlier clarification, it's already the law that it has to be reported. What this allows is for the inclusion of the name of a perpetrator, alleged assailant.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay, thank you.
Okay, Senator Brenner?
Yes. I have a question, because this bill allows the colleges to report the alleged assailants of a serious crime. Why not require the universities to report to the law enforcement? Because basically, these guys or women or whoever the person is could have a record already, and the law enforcement wouldn't know about it. And it just says the institution determines. So at that point, I would think every assault should probably be reported to law enforcement. They could find out early. So I'm kind of on the opposite side, like usual, Senator.
You know, Senator, I think the intent is to also, at the same time, protect the victim. And there could be times where we're for the protection of the victim.
Protect the perpetrator, because you don't know, you haven't done the background yet, is that?
You say protection of the victim, if there was a circumstance.
Right.
I'm sorry.
That it could be the victim.
Yeah.
Telling a story or...
And it would be up, once we report it to police or notify police of these crimes, they have the discretion whether they want to pursue something or not also. But we had to, take into consideration the concerns by CalCASA last year in terms of protecting victims and victims' name when reporting to police. And there was concerns by some last year mm-hmm. when speaking about alleged perpetrators that they needed, that there was a concern with false reporting by victims.
Right.
And so there needed to be some balance in terms of protecting confidentiality of both at that point. So this bill really only speaks to those severe, unique cases where we feel there's a very serious, urgent threat, and we need police assistance.
So the university itself or college does the investigation to make sure it's they believe that it's real before they report it to law enforcement.
We have to report it to law enforcement immediately, so regardless. Under Title IX, we're obligated to do an internal investigation. Mm. The criminal investigation is completely separate.
Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Pan?
Thank you. Just to clarify, because in the analysis, that actually it says that for particularly specific, you know, for crimes such as, sexual assault, violent crime, sexual assault, hate crime, that actually you are required to report it to law enforcement. The issue here for this bill is actually identification of the victim with or without his or her consent, and we're trying to address that aspect. So the crime has to be reported, right?
Of the assailant.
Correct.
The issue here is the question of whether the assailant's identity can be shared.
Right.
The crime itself, you're correct. The underlying crimes must be reported.
Right. That's I just wanted to clarify that, because that's my understanding, is that you actually have to, we're not trying to hide any crimes. The crimes have to be reported. They're reported to law enforcement, but the identity issue, which actually I appreciate you're trying to correct, which actually forbid previously
right.
the university from being able to share. Now there's the ability to do so. So you're actually making it easier for law enforcement to be able to follow up in this bill. And I certainly appreciate that.
Okay. Any other questions from members? All right. Is there a motion on the bill? Bill's been moved by Dr. Pan. Okay. Let's call the roll. Oh, I'm sorry. Would you like to close?
Ask for your aye vote.
Thank you. All right.
Do pass to public safety.
Public safety, right.
Lou?
Aye.
Lou, aye. Renner?
Aye.
Renner, aye. Block?
Aye.
Block, aye. Hancock? Leyva?
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Mendoza?
Aye.
Mendoza, aye. Monning?
Aye.
Monning, aye. Pan?
Aye.
Pan, aye. Vidak?
Aye.
Vidak, aye.
Okay. Eight votes. Sufficient for passage. We'll keep the roll open for our absent member.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you. Okay. Item 10, AB 881. Good morning.
AB 881 is a cleanup bill to AB 256, which was chaptered into law in 2013. AB 256 added cyberbullying into the education code of bullying, which gives schools the authority to discipline students who participate in bullying. AB 881 will make a one-word technical change to make sure that the students forwarding messages through text or social media are also responsible as those who created it. With me today, I have Erica Hoffman from the California School Boards Association and Tony Trigero from the California Teachers Association.
Okay, a simple bill in support.
Erica Hoffman on behalf of the California School Boards Association. We are in support of this measure. We see it as closing a loophole, and we appreciate your aye vote. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tony Trigero on behalf of the California Teachers Association. Ditto.
Okay.
Greg here with the Arkin United Cerebral Palsy California Collaboration. Kids with disabilities are disproportionately bullied, and we support the bill.
Thank you.
Good morning, LeAngela Reed on behalf of
Good morning, LeAngela Reed on behalf of San Francisco Unified School District in support.
Thank you. Okay. Any others in support of the bill? Is there opposition to the bill? It's too early for them. Okay.
Yeah.
Questions from members? Bill has been moved. Boy, this is really quick. Oh, yes.
Mr. Monning.
I would like to just ask a question of the author. There is opposition on file from the ACLU, and I think that it expresses a concern. I'm supportive of your objectives. I would like to just hear how you respond to those concerns of the discipline not necessarily achieving objectives that I think we would all agree can sometimes better be done short of suspension or expulsion.
That's been the concern since we were working on the initial bill, AB 256. The school doesn't have to suspend or expose. The school has the discretion, and I would say most schools these days realize they have to find other means to create a community and change the environment and make sure we keep the students in school. And so I think that that's the last choice that we're going towards. Yes, that is a possibility. It's a possibility within the code that currently exists.
But it doesn't mandate.
No, it doesn't mandate it. There's at the discretion, and you have a lot of schools who now have a lot of different bullying or preventive bullying discussions all year round on campus because they are trying to create a community instead of having to take these actions where our students are not on campus.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. The bill has been – any other questions? The bill has been moved. Please call the roll.
Do pass. Lou?
Aye.
Lou, aye. Renner?
Aye.
Renner, aye. Block?
Aye.
Block, aye. Hancock? Leyva?
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Mendoza?
Aye.
Mendoza, aye. Monning?
Aye.
Monning, aye. Pan?
Aye.
Pan, aye. Vidak?
Aye.
Vidak, aye. That's 8-0.
You have 8 votes. Sufficient for passage. We'll keep the roll open for our absent member. Okay. Well, members, that's it for this morning. Next week, we have 20. Oh, I'm sorry. We'll open the roll. I'm sorry. Okay, we'll open the roll for absent members. Thank you. We'll call the roll for absent members. Okay.
So, do you want me to even do the consent, even though Hancock's not here? Or do you just want me to do the two I
thought? Just do the two others, right.
AB 566, do pass as amended to appropriations. Renner. Renner, no. Hancock? Pan?
Aye.
Pan, aye. That's 6-2.
6-2. We'll keep the roll open for our absent member.
Okay. That's it. We have them on. The
okay.
Other ones.
Everything else is, you're all on. Okay. So, shall we keep the roll open for Senator Hancock? She's not in the building. Tough to get up in the morning. Okay, we'll close the roll and adjourn the committee meeting. Next week, we will have over 22 bills. We're anticipating a longer agenda. And thank you all for coming. Meeting adjourned.